Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
Wrestling Omakase is back, baby. The weekly podcast that takes you across all the top promotions on the entire Japanese wrestling scene, from New Japan to Stardom, NOAH, DDT, All Japan, Mari Gold, Dragon Gate, Tokyo Joshi, Sendai Girls, and a whole lot more. I'm John Carroll, a fan of Japanese wrestling for over 20 years, and every week I'm joined by a rotating cast of guest co-hosts as we break down all the top promotions in Japan, men's and women's. Check out Wrestling Omakase right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network today.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. I am your host, Andrew Rich, joined today by a returning guest after, 7 years, I think. He is one of the co-hosts of the Super J-Cast. It's Joel Abraham. Hello again, Joel.
Hello, thanks for having me back. It's certainly been a while. A lot of stuff has happened since then, but yeah, as soon as I saw that you were doing Music of the Mat Remix, that was a clarion call to me. I wanted to get back in the hot seat, so yeah, great to be back on.
Glad you're here. Yeah, it's been a while. Like you said, it's been a while. We did the Zack Sabre Jr. episode way back when, and since then, yeah, a lot's happened. You know, this was before AEW and the pandemic and all the crazy roster changes and whatnot, and a lot's happened with Zach too, in particular. You know, he got his own stable with TMDK, he dyed his hair blonde, he became world champion, and he got two new entrance themes as well. So it's amazing how time can fly and how things can change, you know, in that time period, for sure, Joel.
Yeah, it was a funny story about that, actually. I've moved to the southwest of England, a place called Devon, and like, it's deep in the countryside, and I've got one friend here, which is fine. I don't need more than one friend. But this friend, we've got a lot of stuff in common, like video games, football and that. For some reason, one day we just ended up talking about wrestling. And then he mentioned, so he was with his partner. I don't know if they're married, but anyway, she was telling me that her brother has a band and they wrote an entrance theme for a wrestler. And they're like, oh, you wouldn't have heard of him. I can't even remember what his name is. And they say, oh, let me just check it up. So she did a bit of Googling. She's like, Zack Sabre Jr.? But yeah, you wouldn't know that guy. I was just like, what? This blew my mind.
Who?
So, yeah.
Who is this guy? What's going on here now? But yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing for sure. And I appreciate you being here in the middle of the G1 climax, which is going on right now. I know it's a busy time for you, as someone who does a New Japan podcast and reviews all those shows, of course. And it's busy for me too, you know, as someone who only watches the G1. It's still a lot of wrestling to consume in a few short weeks. And this is, I believe, my 10th or 11th G1 that I'm watching in real time. And it's always the same. Like, I'm always like, oh my God, there's so many shows. How do I keep up? And then before I know it, it's over. You know, I guess some things, they just, you know, don't ever change, I guess, Joel.
Yeah, it's now a good time to get in a little plug, because I know if we backload the plugs, people just skip them, don't they? But seeing as you have brought up the G1 Climax, now I think would be an appropriate time to mention, if people didn't already know, that I am doing G1 daily audio over on the Super J-Cast Patreon. So reviewing each show in depth, you know, going through the undercards, talking about all the stories, the narratives, the attendances, the match quality, all of that stuff. So I've had good reviews so far. I think people are enjoying it. And I know our friend Joe Lanza does a tremendous job with his bonus audio on the Voices of Wrestling flagship. But I'd like to think mine sort of comes at it from a slightly different angle, sort of maybe a bit more generous towards New Japan, a bit more optimistic, not doing anything that's not done in good faith. You know, I'd call it how it is. But yeah, I think if you are following the G1 Climax, then you can check out my Night 3 review, which is up for free. So you don't have to pay for that one. So give that a listen. If you like it, then plonk down a bit of money and you can listen to the rest of it.
Yeah, no one can say you're not doing the work, because it is a lot of work to, you know, come up with thoughts and opinions about each show and each match and attendance and so forth. So yeah, on that front, I commend you, good sir.
Yeah, it's a labor of love.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes it is. Sometimes it's not, maybe, but but anyway, the reason you're here, Joel, is because Damon, your podcast partner and former guest on this show, he texted me the other week, and he said that you would love to be on here again. And I said, of course, I'd love to have Joel on again. So here we are. And normally, I either tell the guest the topic I want to do, or I give them a list of choices to see if any of them, you know, tickle their fancy. But you actually gave me the topic that you wanted to do. And I said, yes, it sounds like fun. And the topic is video game music. Now, after I said yes, I thought, I need some sort of wrestling-based title for the episode. I can't just call it video game music. I need something more clever than that. And then it hit me like a sledgehammer to the face.
Time to play the game! Time to play the game!
Yes, this episode is called Time to Play the Game. And as much as I don't want to, I do have to hand it to Isis here, to old Paul Levesque, for the inspiration for this episode's title there, Joel.
I'm applauding. That's genius. As soon as that those first chords hit, I have a big grin on my face. Bravo.
Well, I guess my first question would be, you know, what's your video game history like? Because obviously you're a huge fan. You reference Shenmue all the goddamn time. But what's your history there with games?
So the first console that I had was a Super Nintendo. I got bought that. God, that must have been around when it came out. It must have been like 1994, 95, something like that. It was a Hanukkah present. And I played it so much that I got blisters on my thumbs and went a bit mental. So my parents gave it away. So then I didn't have a console for about, gosh, how long would I have been there? So about, yeah, about maybe 7, 8 years until the Sega Dreamcast came out, where Judaism seems to be a running theme in this. My bar mitzvah money, I saved up and spent that on a Sega Dreamcast, which is an incredible console, and that's where the Shenmue stuff comes in. So from that point on, I had more sort of access to consoles, but I went through a phase where I didn't have a console and I was just sort of peering through the window, you know, like the Russell Crowe meme from Les Mis, where he's sort of peering through the window watching other people do stuff. So that was me watching other people enjoying video games. But yeah, even since I was little, I've always enjoyed the music of video games and think it can be as enjoyable to me to listening to music used in other contexts, you know, with lyrics and stuff like that. So and video game music has come along a long way since those days, you know, the early 90s that I was talking about. But I still get a lot of enjoyment from listening to the old stuff. So yeah, I've tried to pick sort of a broad range of stuff for us to talk about this time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking about this. I've never felt like video games are as big a part of me as like wrestling is. Like, I've never loved them as much as I've loved wrestling, but they've still been a rather sizable chunk of my life. Like, when I was growing up, and this will sound extremely privileged, but I had so many video game consoles, N64, GameCube, PS2, Xbox, 360, multiple Game Boys of various iterations. Like, I was spoiled rotten when it came to video games, but I think I counterbalanced that by just being a good boy and not getting into trouble, so that it balanced out in that sense there. But there was also a large gap in my life where I didn't play any games. Like, after I graduated high school in 2011 and went to college, I just stopped playing them. And I didn't start up again until 2019 when I got a PS4 because it was a Black Friday sale going on. And the PS4 came with The Last of Us, God of War 2018, and Horizon Zero Dawn. And that's what got me back into playing. And, you know, I still don't play as much as I used to when I was a kid and a teen. You know, I'll go for stretches of time where I just don't pick up a controller at all. But the games I have played in recent years have been some of my favorite games of all time. So it does still scratch that itch when I go to it, Joel.
Yeah, I don't get to play them as much as I used to. Obviously, having two young kids, by the time I put them to bed, I'm too exhausted to actually play any computer games these days. But I do occasionally like to play games with them. I want to try and share some of my own video game memories with my kids. So, like, for example, we've been playing a bit of Shenmue together in recent months, which has been interesting. They seem to quite like that. And we did some of the sort of old Super Nintendo classics as well. So I think there's, for me as a parent, like, I would much rather my kids enjoy console gaming like that rather than online gaming. I just, you know, I see things like Roblox and all that and just makes my skin crawl. So hopefully they can enjoy the fantastic world of console gaming like I did when I was younger.
All right, well, let's get to the music here, shall we? We have 8 picks and a playout song at the end, as per usual. Joel, you are the guest. You'll go first. What's your first pick?
So our first pick is a game called Streets of Rage 2 from the Sega Genesis. And the track I've picked is called Never Return Alive. And this is a game that I used to play a lot when I was in secondary school. I used to go to my friend's house on Friday afternoon and play this. It's just an incredible 2D scrolling beat 'em up. Absolute classic. Music's a classic. So, yeah, enjoy. Music that I play when you face the bosses at the end of the level. So it's a side scrolling beat 'em up. You sort of walk through part of a city or a beach or a jungle or something, beating up a load of goons, and then when you get to the end of the level, Never Return Alive will play when you're facing one of the bosses. So it's a great song. It's like a kind of a remix from the boss theme of Streets of Rage 1, which I think is called Attack of the Barbarian. And the particular one that I picked was it's got like this rain introduction. So it's from the first level where you sort of go through some city streets, you go through a bar, and then you go into the back alley of a bar and it's pouring with rain, and then there's a load of goons there, and you can see the boss of the first level, called this guy called Barbon, just standing at the back of the alleyway, and he's waiting for you, and as you get closer then he'll rip his shirt off and go come on and start the boss fight. So it's just that the atmosphere that's created in this 16-bit game is just, I think, incredible. It's dark, it's moody, I think it really captures that the grittiness, like that noir feel of city streets at night. And also it's got that idiosyncratic technical industrial edge where we've got a lot of heavy bass, we've got the synths, lots of syncopated rhythms. So it creates that you know, that sense of urgency as you're heading into a big boss fight. And the composer of this, really famous guy called Yuzo Koshiro, so it's one of his signature pieces. So he was really influenced by the club music scene at the time. So he's blending those influences with, I'd say, like a lot of cinematic stuff as well. So I think that's what made the Streets of Rage and Streets of Rage 2 soundtrack so groundbreaking at the time. And I think gives them a lot of longevity. I mean, people still enjoy them today. I was scrolling through Reddit today and I saw a video of Yuzo Koshiro doing like a gig. He was like DJing with his own mix of music from the Streets of Rage series. So people even enjoy it to this day. So yeah, I just think it's a really atmospheric, moody piece of music. You got that feeling of, you know, danger and isolation and looming violence with the boss encounter you're facing at the end of the level there.
Yeah, I think this episode, more so than others, will be one where our our comments, our analysis will be heavily colored by our personal experiences with the game, because I have heard of all of the games that you've picked, but that doesn't mean I've played them, you know, because most of these came out in the 90s, and I was either too young to play them or wasn't born yet, so there you go. But regardless, yeah, this song, this is a, like you said, a 16-bit club banger. It has that dancey vibe to it, that tempo and that energy, but it also has the energy to accompany a fighting game, I think. Very fast-paced and so forth. And Mortal Kombat would use that same tactic later on with the Mortal Kombat album. So it's kind of ahead of its time in that regard, I think, Joel.
Yeah, definitely. There's some really interesting videos, actually, you can find. They're on YouTube, where they've sort of put together club anthems at the time from sort of the nightclub scene that you can hear the direct influence from that to particular tracks in Streets of Rage. So yeah, I've always enjoyed listening to that stuff. So yeah, I could have done an entire episode with Streets of Rage music, and maybe I'll put something up on the Patreon, but yeah, always enjoy the opportunity to talk Streets of Rage.
All right, well, my first pick, this is from, I think, my first favorite video game. I played this when I was a young lad there on the N64. It's Super Mario 64. The composer is Koji Kondo. And this is the music from the level Dire Dire Docks, and also Jolly Roger Bay. That's just instant relaxation music, so soothing. I love the blending of the synths in there and the calming melody and the way it brings in later on in the song a percussion element too, to kind of spice things up there. And it works so well for water levels like these levels are, because it feels like you're swimming in around in these tranquil waters. Everything's nice and peaceful. And then a giant eel comes out of nowhere and tries to bite you. But still, you know, this is, I think, my favorite song in the game. And there's a lot of great songs in the game, but this is one I always kind of go back to. And it's yet another example of a classic Mario song, because he has a lot of them. You know, that franchise is jam-packed with great music there, Joel.
Yeah, this is a classic. I love this one as well. About a year or two ago, my kids went through a phase of just loving sea life, like marine life. So we made a little video together of loads of different sea creatures that we could find at our local aquarium. And I edited all that together into a video with us saying the names of the creatures with some backing music. And there was a lot of Koji Kondo went into that backing music and this particular track, Dire Dire Docks, because Koji Kondo, I think, one of the masters of doing this kind of atmospheric music to fit the theme of a level. So yeah, it's this lovely sort of dreamy, aquatic, ambient music. It's got the nice layered synths to it. I can't speak today. And yeah, just really matches that sense of underwater mystery and the calm with that sort of minimalist melody. Bit melancholic almost, but serene at the same time. And I think it's just like a really classic example of that adaptive music design, because as the track goes on, then it gets a bit more upbeat. And I think, like, as you play the level, as you get to different parts of the level, it kind of changes slightly. You get some drums, if I'm not mistaken, in there. So yeah, just a really famous piece of music and a lot of really interesting covers. And there's a steel drum version I remember hearing a few years ago, which I really love. So yeah, great pick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I haven't played Super Mario 64 in a very, very long time, but the music has stuck with me ever since. And if you just said the name of the levels, I can recall the music. Like, that's how memorable it is to me. You know, Bob on Battlefield and Cool Cool Mountain and Shifting Sandland and so many others. They're all burned into my brain. So yeah, I loved that game as a kid, and I still love it, you know, as an adult, even though I haven't played it in forever. So, all right, Joel, what's your next pick?
So my next pick is from a Final Fantasy game, and it's a Final Fantasy game that's a bit of a cult classic. Not as popular as the Final Fantasy VII, which is the one that everybody loves, but this was the first Final Fantasy game that I played. So it's from Final Fantasy VIII, and it's called The Man with the Machine Gun. Fantasy 8, it's a weird game. I hope John Carroll's listening to this, because I know John Carroll is also a fan of Final Fantasy 8. So only weirdos like it, because Final Fantasy 7 was, a lot of people would say, a perfect game, but the devs just decided to just pull the tablecloth and just start again. And yeah, it's a lot of very controversial Final Fantasy 8. But this track is an interesting one, because it kind of runs parallel to the main story of the game. So in the main story, you're controlling this guy called Squall, who's very emo. A lot of people don't like this character. But then there are sequences in the game where Squall and his party fall asleep, and then they have these dream sequences where it shifts over to a completely different group of characters, led by a character called Laguna. So this is Laguna's battle theme, so it plays during those dream sequences. So this is not the main protagonist's theme song. This is when Laguna gets into a battle. So it's very energetic, very sort of techno-inspired. So it's a lot more fast-paced and catchy synth in terms of melody than the regular battle theme from Final Fantasy VIII. And so it shows that tonal shift, because Laguna's a bit goofy, he's a bit of a weirdo, and it's sort of a lighter, more adventurous contrast to Squall's sort of darker, introspective segment. So I think it reflects the character of Laguna. It shows his charisma and his optimism and his kind of hands-on attitude towards life. And I think this is a bit of a fan favorite track. I know it gets a lot of love. It's got quite a unique sound, very nostalgic association with the Laguna subplot. And yeah, just really nice upbeat rhythm to sort of mirror the spontaneous nature of this guy who's quite often playing the comic relief. And sort of as you get later on into the story, it all ties together and you get to see what the connection is between him and the main group of characters. But it does recur quite a lot in Final Fantasy media. It's been reorchestrated a few times, remixed in later titles like the Dissidia and Theater Rhythm games due to its popularity. So, yeah, a bit of a classic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had no idea that Carl Anderson was in a Final Fantasy game. No idea about that. The bright lights of Squaresoft and Good Brother Chocobo and all that stuff. But no, this is another, you know, techno dancey song there. I do love the random anvil noise in there. That's pretty fun. And yeah, I looked up game footage of it. seeing a soldier with a machine gun shooting at these monsters while this, you know, upbeat dance song is playing it's a bit of an odd contrast for sure. But like you said, it's meant to be, you know, goofy and lighter, so that makes sense there. And it is Final Fantasy, you know, it is taking place in this strange other world, you know, where anything can happen, I guess. So that does work in that sense there too, Joel.
Yeah, and it's made by Nobuo Uematsu, who, again, absolute legend in the video game soundtrack world. And I could say this about pretty much all of my picks, but the whole Final Fantasy VIII soundtrack is incredible, and it just goes to so many different places and elicits so many different emotions. So one of the soundtracks, I could just listen to all four discs of it, start to finish, and it will just take me away for a few hours, and I'll just sort of be replaying all the fantastic moments from the games in my head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I've never played a Final Fantasy game, actually. Almost everything I know about the series is from Kenny Omega, I think. but you know what it is? I'm just not a big fan of, like, turn-based RPG games and strategy games and things like that. I need to actually do the sword swinging and the shooting or whatever. And I know some of them do have that real-time combat, but I've never delved into the series there, Joel.
No, I sort of went on a bit of a JRPG odyssey during lockdown. So stuck in a hotel with my wife and my child, Esther. She was a little baby at the time. So I didn't really have that much to do. So I ended up just digging into the back catalogs and playing a lot of classic turn-based Japanese RPGs, and yeah, had a really good time with them. So I think it's not something that I would do now, but I still have sort of, even though it was a very weird and stressful time back then, something I do have a lot of fondness for.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, my next pick here, I wanted to pick something from a wrestling game, and I picked what I think is still my favorite wrestling game of all time, and the first game I ever owned for the PS2. This is SmackDown Here Comes the Pain, and this is by the Yuke's Sound Team, and this song has the very catchy and memorable title of Background Music 11. So unlike Dire Docs, I would not call this song soothing. I think the mix of, you know, new metal, crunchy rock guitars and hip-hop beats and record scratches and various vocal drops and just blatant screaming there, it's not meant to relax you at all. It's meant to be aggressive and in your face and, ah, wrestling, let's go, come on, and all that stuff. And that all makes sense there. And this is basically what the entire soundtrack of the game sounds like. It's some form of this type of music. And this is actually the last SmackDown game to not have a licensed soundtrack. So there is that. And I did spend a lot of hours playing this game and being in the creator wrestler mode where it played nonstop. So I heard this music quite a lot. And, you know, I'm not saying this is, like, great music by any stretch of the imagination, but I do have nostalgia for it. You know, it does take me back to those days where I could play as, you know, Sean O'Hare and Rodney Mack and Ultimo Dragon. You know, all the stars are here from the 2003 roster. So, yeah, it's not as beautiful as other songs are, but it does make me feel something, Joel.
Did you create yourself as a wrestler?
Yes, I created myself. Yes, he had the American flag tights, all the cliches.
What was the finishing move?
I think it was the Key Crusher, Low Key's finisher, and Jay White's, you know, Kiwi Crusher, yeah, that move. But yeah, I did create myself, I will admit that, because, you know, Everyone else did it, you know.
Of course, right, right passage. My what was my gimmick character? It's like Joel, the Hammer Abraham, something like that. I think it was a fisherman suplex I was rocking back in the day. But yeah, I mean, this could not be any more 2000s if it tried. It's just exudes that, you know, wearing the tap out t-shirt with the tribal sleeve tattoos, just those intense hard hitting guitarists, just absolutely typical of your early 2000s wrestling. And yeah, it's got that perfect atmosphere, adrenaline, confrontation. And like that, I mean, we've all got those games that we spent hours in. And if we listen to those menu themes, like the menu soundtracks that you'd have on the loop while you are, you know, editing stuff or going through the menus or whatever, where it would just transport you straight back to where you were back then, just the wave of nostalgia. But yeah, I didn't play this game. My first wrestling game actually was SmackDown versus Raw 2007. So a lot of those songs have got a lot of nostalgia for me, like Ghostface Killer, The Champ. There was one, I don't know who it's by, but it just was Money in the Bank, Money in the Bank. So,
oh, right, yeah, that soundtrack too. I remember hearing that a lot when I played that game.
Yeah, it's classic.
Yeah, and a fun fact about this particular background music, one of the samples in it was also used in one of John Cena's theme songs before Basic Thuganomics. Like when the White Rapper gimmick was just starting out, he had like this production library song, and you can hear the sample that goes this joint right here. So yeah, a little cross-pollination there, I guess, Joel.
Yeah, it's got that like really strong new metal industrial rock vibe, like bang on with the... I suppose this would have been sort of the transition over from Attitude Era to Ruthless Aggression, would that be right?
It's Ruthless Aggression, yeah. This game came out in the fall of 2003. So it's right in that time period, yeah.
Yeah, well, that song is ruthlessly aggressive. We'll definitely do that.
Definitely. All right, what you got next there, Joel?
Okay, next is Shenmue, which is a very controversial game. A lot of people will tell you it's crap, but certainly me and Rich Craich can vouch for it. So the track that I've picked from Shenmue is called Free 7. Probably got away with just playing like 5 seconds of that, because it's not the most dynamic or varied piece of music, but one that's very evocative for me. I always try to play this game around Christmas time, because for some reason it's just a game that I associate with Christmas, playing on the Dreamcast back in the day. So this is a track that is background music. It plays in the back half of the game after you get a job working the forklift truck. So when your working day is finished, then this is the background music, because you're just essentially just killing time, making your way home. So it's just a really ambient, reflective tone. We've got all the soft synths, very gentle melodies, just creating that sort of calming, introspective atmosphere. And to me, represents almost that sort of serene mundaneness of everyday life. Because like I said, it will play just during the casual in-game moments where, you know, you might be buying little toys, the gashapons from the vending machine, or petting the cat, giving it some milk on your way home, just walking through the nighttime streets, making your way back to bed. And it just, I think, reflects that the slow-paced realism of Ryo's daily routine, because obviously there's more to it in that. Like, the game has an overarching narrative where he's on a revenge quest, but it's sort of the juxtaposition between those dramatic moments and these moments where there's nothing really happening, and it's just again, just the slow everyday life of Rio as he's making his way home after a day at work. So like the title of the track, Free 7, so that free is like an acronym. So it stands for Full Reactive Eyes Entertainment. So that was the gimmick of the Shenmue game. So it was kind of emphasizing that open world interaction and immersion. So there were 15 free tracks which sort of cycle and change as different things happen throughout the game. So it's a track that is very peaceful but carries a quiet sadness to it. It mirrors Ryo's internal grief and determination, and it's almost got like a dreamlike quality. There's a sort of a meditative kind of surreal feel as you're exploring Yokosuka's harbor and streets, and just really part of Shenmue's unique identity as it kind of blends that slice of life storytelling with the mystery and revenge of the main plot. And I think anyone who listens to this, like I'm sure if Rich has listened to this, he will feel that sense of soothing nostalgia. It's got a really strong sense of place and time, especially for people like me who are familiar with that Dreamcast era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the word that comes to mind when I hear this song is murky, because it feels like music you hear when you're sneaking around some underground base or you're in some dark cave, perhaps. You know, there's tension there. There's some spookiness. Now, from what you described, not a very spooky game is Shenmue with its you know, petting cats and vending machines. But the repetition, you know, of what you said of just going about your day there, that does line up with that piece of music. Now, you know, I don't have as much passion for this game as you do because I never played it with its, you know, forklift races and mini games and whatnot. But I still enjoy the dramatic elements of the song, Joel.
Well, it gets compared unfavorably these days to the Yakuza games, which in many ways is like a spiritual successor to it. But whereas Yakuza is like all action and every single part of the world is full of content and mini games and exciting stuff, things you can interact with, what I like about Shenmue is there's none of that. Like if you go, you can go into a shop and there's literally nothing to do in there. It's just a shop. Like there's a pizza shop you can go into where there's an Italian chef and he's doing these sort of exaggerated actions of making a pizza. And there's a lovely tune that goes with it. Let's all have some pizza. Nothing you can do in there. Nowhere, it's not part of the storyline. There's no reason for you to go in there. There's no mini games, nothing you can pick up there, but it's just there because they decided to put it there. So I like the confidence that they had in creating this world where, again, there are these large pockets of quiet mundanity. And I don't know, I just find that very soothing for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did read how influential this game was in terms of open world games, where, you know, you don't have to go from A to B to C no matter what. You can take the time to, you know, explore and walk around or whatever and do something else, which we've seen in a million games ever since. You know, you can do the main quest if you want, but you can also do side quests. You can do exploration and look for collectibles. You can, you know, hunt monsters and level up that way. You can do nothing. You can just look around and, you know, enjoy the visuals, enjoy the atmosphere or whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the game actively wants you to do that. So there'll be moments where, like, you need to go to a particular shop at a particular time to interact with someone, and then you get there and the shop will be closed and it won't open until the next day at 12 o'clock. And a lot of people, particularly modern day gamers, will find that quite frustrating and think, oh, you know, I want to just sort of speed run it and just get from the sort of critical path of the game, the key cutscenes. But it was deliberately made that way for you to go and interact with the world and, you know, visit the arcade and go to the shops and play around with the music and get on the bus and go to other places. So yeah, it was deliberately crafted to sort of push you away from the main critical part of the storyline and encourage you to explore the world that they created.
Mm-hmm. All right, so my next pick here, this is another sports game. It's a baseball game. It's MVP Baseball 2005. And this is a song off of the game's soundtrack. It's by a band called The Bravery. And this is An Honest Mistake. People, I don't mean a thing to you.
You to know my old friend.
So I told myself when I was making my list that I would refrain from licensed songs, but in this case I made an exception, because the reason I played this game as a kid was because it was after the Red Sox won the World Series in 04, you know, for the first time in 86 years, and Manny Ramirez was on the cover of the game, so it was in that celebratory mania. But the soundtrack was what stuck with me after all these years, because there's a lot of great songs on the soundtrack, including Tessie by the Dropkick Murphys, which, funny enough, I played on the Hometown Crowd episode with Damon last year. This song I enjoy a lot, too. It's got kind of a Blue Monday vibe to it, with, you know, the steady percussion and the synths and the mostly monotone British vocals. Has a little more of a rock edge to it underneath as well. And to this day, 20 years later, I'll see this song as I'm, you know, scrolling through my Spotify or my iTunes or whatever, and I'll just think MVP Baseball 2005. Like, that's the band's legacy to me. But that's true for the entire soundtrack. You know, I've played a bunch of sports games over the years, and they've all had licensed music in them, but this one's always stayed with me, you know, front and center in my mind, partly because of the Red Sox, of course, but also partly because of my age and, you know, how much I enjoy the songs, Joel.
Yeah, I think anyone who's played any of the EA sports games, certainly I was a big fan, and still do, and I still play EA FC 25, and yeah, I think they were sort of pioneers of having the licensed soundtrack. So everyone's got their era where, you know, they hear a particular track that came from that EA song, and it just triggers a lot of memories for them. So this is like your classic mid-2000s indie rock with that new wave influence that was just sort of all really ubiquitous, like when I was at university in the mid to late 2000s, that was all the sort of music you'd hear in the nightclubs. And yeah, there's interesting lyrics here. You know, I could pick up lyrics of regret and consequence. Like, it was an honest mistake. Don't look at me that way. Like, as Damon says to me, if he accidentally deletes a recording. And no, yeah, the contrast is the upbeat tempo. No, I should say that's only ever happened once, but which is incredible, really, the number of years we've been doing it. But yeah, I imagine like this track has sort of helped, and tracks like this help define that kind of cool youthful identity that the EA games were going for at the time, and a lot of those songs have become like nostalgic anthems for a lot of sports game fans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it definitely captures, you know, the music scene at the time, or at least a certain part of it, you know, because looking at the rest of the track list here, you've got Pot Hot Heat, you've got Louis XIV, the Zootons, and You Will Know Us by the Trail of Dead. So it's definitely a nice snapshot of mid-2000s, you know, alt-rock and that whole scene there. But yeah, you know, I've discovered a lot of songs and a lot of bands through these types of soundtracks on sports games, mostly wrestling games, to be fair, but a few Maddens here and there, too, because, yeah, they are a really good resource to, you know, uncover some bands and songs that you wouldn't have known about otherwise, Joel.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to broaden your horizons like that. So, like we touched on with the wrestling games, a lot of bands that I was introduced to by the soundtracks of those particular games. So yeah, it definitely opens up a world of musical possibilities.
For sure, for sure. All right, what's your next pick, Joel?
So my next pick, we've had a Mario game, so we have to have a Sonic game as well for balance. So I've picked a track from Sonic the Hedgehog 3, and it's, I mean, the title of this level is very controversial. Some people call it Hydrocity. I'm fairly certain it's Hydro City. So yeah, this is Hydro City Act 2. We'll be right back. I think it's really interesting that we had Die Die Docs to contrast this one with, because this is a water level theme, but it's very upbeat. It's unusually energetic and funky for an underwater stage, because usually your underwater stage music would be slow and ambient water themed music. And this reflects the level design. So it's really tightly synced with that, because the music mirrors the way that Hydro City is designed, which is a lot of fast currents, loops, sudden drops of Hydro City's layout. So whilst it was a water level, very different to a lot of other water levels in the same time, which would be sort of slow and plodding, and so the music would reflect that. So this piece of music, really funky, like really funky bass line, syncopation. We've got rapid percussion, very punchy bass, quite complex in terms of the melody, which keeps pace with the speed of a Sonic the Hedgehog game. Now, in terms of who wrote this, there's a lot of rumours that Michael Jackson was involved in this, the production of the Sonic the Hedgehog 3 soundtrack. And, you know, I'm not going to get into a debate about the separating the art from the artist. We've all got our problematic faves, but yeah, there are a lot of rumours and a lot of evidence that suggests that Michael Jackson was heavily involved with the Sonic 3 soundtrack. So yeah, this is Act 2 of Hydro City, so it's distinct from Act 1, which is also a really good tune, which they kind of sort of piggyback off of each other nicely. So each act has a slightly different version of the theme, so they add a bit of musical variation within the same zone. And Hydro City Act 2, it's a bit of a fan favourite. I think it's widely regarded as one of the best Sonic water level themes, if not the best in the franchise. There's a great remix of it in Sonic Mania, which is a game that's not too... it came out not too long ago, where they just basically took a load of the classic levels from Sonic 1, 2 and 3 and Knuckles, and then threw in a few extra ones there and remixed them and put in a remix version of the soundtrack, all your old classics sort of jazzed up and really fun to listen to. And I think a track that really clearly defines Sonic's audio identity, if you like. You got the funk, the jazz, the pop influences, so it's just really emblematic of 16-bit Sonic's musical legacy.
Yeah, this is a game I've actually played that you picked here, because I got a Sonic game collection for the GameCube, which had like a bunch of Sonic games on it. And I enjoyed playing Sonic games, but the music is really good too, because it's electronic, like Streets of Rage and Final Fantasy are, but it has that classic feeling to it. It doesn't evoke dance song vibes. It's just meant to be bright and poppy and zippy and colorful, like Sonic is, you know. And you touched upon, you know, the comparisons to the Mario song that I played earlier, which is a good point. You know, yeah, that song was very slower and tranquil and serene and calming. This one is, you know, a lot more of Sonic's speed, no pun intended there. And again, it reflects, you know, his energy. Because if you've got a Sonic the Hedgehog game, you don't want slow, morose, you know, tranquil music. You want music that reflects his speed. You know, he goes fast. That's his thing. Sonic the Hedgehog goes fast. So you want music that will have that energy to it, Joel.
Yeah, and again, the whole Sonic 3 and Knuckles soundtrack, because Sonic 3, it was originally just released as Sonic the Hedgehog 3, but it was actually half of the completed game. So you get the full game if you put Sonic 3 together with Sonic and Knuckles. So it was designed to be back-to-back, those two games. So if you just play Sonic 3, you only get half of the full thing. But I just think it's an absolute tour de force. Like, it's a masterpiece of a game that I think has aged really well. I know a lot of people sort of criticize the early Sonic games because, you know, you do the fun first level where you get all the loops and you're speeding through it. But then as you get to the more sort of trickier platforming bits, the whole thing kind of falls apart. But I don't think that's true for Sonic 3 and Sonic and Knuckles. There was, I think it was a Retronauts, they did like a ridiculous deep dive. They did about like 12 hours on Sonic 3 and Knuckles altogether, which really sort of illustrates what a fantastic sort of tour de force it is in terms of 2D platform gaming and video gaming in general. So yeah, nice to throw some flowers its way.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say, you know, it being a water level in a Sonic game, it does remind me of the Sonic drowning music, which is the most nerve-wracking thing when you're a kid, you know. And of course, you know, Sonic falling off screen with the bubbles coming out of his mouth is horrifying, you know. Just a total trauma fest all around there, Joel.
Yeah, well, in Hydro City, they're quite generous with the air bubbles that you needed to collect to stop that from happening, because they didn't want you to break the rhythm of listening to this awesome piece of music. They wanted you to hear it to completion. So, yeah, it doesn't happen too many times in Hydro City.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, my next pick is from 2010, and it's from Grand Theft Auto Horse, a.k.a. Red Dead Redemption. This is an artist named Jamie Liddell, who did a new version of a song he already had done for the game, a new version just for the game. This song is called Compass, Red Dead on Arrival version.
And I know the only compass that I need, oh, is the one leads back to you. And the burning blisters on my feet will call to hold me as I'm close to fall. Away from the home of your arms I stray, off the radar and into harm's way. Now I know the only compass that I need, oh, is the one that leads back to you.
Yeah, I love that song so much. Spoiler alert on a 15-year-old game, but you spend the majority of it hunting down your old gang members in the Wild West. And when you finally beat the leader of the gang, you get on your horse and you ride home to your family. And this song plays as you're riding. And it comes out of nowhere. And it's such a stirring moment as you're going and the song is playing, but not in a triumphant, heroic way. It's sorrowful. You're forced to reckon with what you've done and who you've killed and how far you've gone for the sake of your family. And the song really plays into those emotions as this really haunting Western song with the vocals and the acoustic guitar and the strings. The only compass that I need is the one leads back to you, away from the home of your arms I stray, off the radar and into harm's way. So it's the classic trope of I've won, I'm coming home, but I'm not the same man that I was before. And yeah, that's one of those moments in a game that I'll never forget, Joel.
Yeah, it's that sort of classic adage about he who seeks revenge digs two graves. So yeah, I also played this game. I can't remember too much from it. I mean, it didn't have much impact on me, but almost this is the sort of song I could see being used in a Hangman Adam Page little montage thing going into a big match. He's missed a trick if he's not used that. But yeah, I like it. It's really, it fits the atmosphere. Very gritty, bluesy vocals. You've got this instrumental, very sparse, very soulful. And yeah, definitely captures that solitude and the emotional solitude of sort of riding out in the Wild West. And those lyrics about purpose, direction, tying in with the themes of the game. And it's very raw. It's like very stripped down. And I think enhances that, the moody atmosphere of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and raw and stripped down is what you want in a Western game where you're, you know, you're away from civilized society for, you know, most of the game, for sure. But yeah, Red Dead 1, I loved that game so much. And I tried three times to get into Red Dead 2. I tried, but I can't stick with it. There's too many little things you have to deal with. You know, you got to make sure you have the right clothing and you're not too hot, not too cold. You got to eat. You got to brush your horse. You got to clean out your guns. You got to contribute to the camp. You know, it's too realistic for my liking. It's not as much of a game as it is, you know, a Wild West simulator, I guess. So, yeah, I enjoyed the first one more than I did the second one. That's for sure, Joel.
Yeah, definitely. I never tried Red Dead Redemption 2 myself. Yeah, so if it's not exactly a glowing seal of approval from you, I'll probably give it a pass. But yeah, good fond memories of the first one, at least.
Mm-hmm. All right, what you got next there, man?
So next, it's another childhood favorite of mine, a game that was actually influenced by a Disneyland ride. So this song is from the game The Secret of Monkey Island, and this song is called Introduction.
Thank you.
a point and click adventure game from LucasArts. Incredibly funny, like really, really witty. There's loads of great gags in there, lots of visual gags, amazing humor. And also notable for being a game that has no game overs, apart from there's like one very specific thing you can do to get a game over. But it was very much sort of like a riposte to the classic sort of Sierra adventure games at the time, where if you clicked on the wrong pixel, you just die constantly. So they wanted to do it differently there. So there's this whole thesis written about what adventure games should be. And Monkey Island was very much emblematic of that, where you're just there to have a good time and enjoy the story and enjoy the characters rather than it trying to be sort of fiendishly difficult or punishing. And this song, this track is just really iconic. It's got that Caribbean feel to it. You've got that nice blend of calypso and reggae, those very sort of piratey melodies to set the whimsical tone of the game. And just a really memorable theme. It's a really catchy melody, and it recurs throughout the series. Every sequel sort of comes back and has sort of riffs off of this main theme. I think this is considered one of the best video game themes, and certainly it really captures the themes and the tone of the game. So it's playful, but it's also a little bit mysterious at the start. So you've got opening with that air of intrigue, and then comes into the lighthearted adventure sense of it, which matches the game's humour and setting. And in the sequels, they sort of pioneered this thing called iMuse, which was a dynamic audio system which allowed the music tracks to shift seamlessly into one another depending on where you're going. So like you'd have the main soundtrack of the town that you're in, and then if you went into a different shop, then you get this little sort of segue going into a different part of the music. So it was really, really cleverly done. It was really quite groundbreaking at the time, and just again sets the tone perfectly for this comedy adventure that you're going to have, because it's very sort of offbeat, very self-aware, quite a satirical game in terms of the sense of humor of it. You got that timeless LucasArts sound. If you've played any sort of LucasArts point and click adventure games, it was just a defining example of that. It was ubiquitous in the early 90s, those adventure games. I think it was Michael Land who scored this one. So again, just got really deep nostalgic appeal, deeply loved by fans, and I think a standout moment upon launching the game. You start the game, you hear this tune, you get the picture of Melee Island, and instantly I've just got a big grin on my face, because you know you're going to have a wonderful and hilarious pirate adventure.
Yeah, if you have a game called Monkey Island, there better be some sort of tropical theme song going on there with, you know, flutes and vibraphones and things of that nature, and they delivered for sure. But yeah, this is another game where I never played it, but I've heard a ton of praise for it over the years. And what's good about the music, you know, is it tells you what to expect in the game from the jump. It's not going to be a crazy action-adventure game with explosions and death and so forth. No, it's a nice, pleasant game where you explore and solve puzzles. And yeah, the playful, easygoing, tropical intro music leads you right into that, Joel.
And they've done some remasters of it that have come out fairly recently. So very accessible. So yeah, anyone listening who's not played it, it's just an absolute snack of a game. You'll have a delightful time with it. So do check it out. They've got like remastered versions where they've redone the graphics and the music. Personally, I'm just very attached to the classic version. I like the nostalgia of the original sort of pixely graphics and Amiga soundtrack. But they've definitely done a tremendous job with the updated remastered graphics and soundtrack. And I think on a lot of these ones, you can actually press a button to switch between the two. So you press the button, then it will go back to the sort of pixely graphics in the original soundtrack. So definitely a strong recommendation if you want to have a good time. It's not going to take up a particularly long time. I mean, you'd be sort of in and out of there within 2-3 hours, I reckon. But just a real joy to play. And I think it's aged very, very well.
Mm-hmm. All right, my next pick here. We're entering my PS4 era of games with this one here. This is 2018 Marvel's Spider-Man from Insomniac Games. The composer is a guy named John Paisano, and I went with a song that I believe is the main menu music. It's called Web Launch. We'll be right back. So if the mission was to make the most Spider-Man-esque theme possible, then mission accomplished. Like, this is everything heroic and cinematic about Spider-Man just infused into this song. The melody, you know, ba 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 ba, and the choir and the strings zipping underneath, and the horns and the drums pounding away. It's amazing. I want to play the game again right now. That's how good the song is. And the game is outstanding, too. I mean, the traversing around the city via web sling alone is incredible. And the soaring nature of the music reflects the soaring, you know, nature of Spider-Man, too. So it all ties together there as well. So, I can't say enough good things about this song, about the Spider-Man game, about the Miles Morales spinoff that I also played. I haven't played Spider-Man 2 because that's a PS5 game, but I've heard nothing but praise for that one as well. So, if you want to just feel good and feel like a superhero, listen to this song because it will get the job done. Big fan of this music and this game, Joel.
Yeah, I've not played it myself, but again, I've just heard nothing but good things about it. And like you said, John Paisano absolutely understood the assignment here. We've got those classic heroic orchestral swells, the dynamic tempo changes, and I can just imagine, like, it perfectly matches Spidey's agility swinging from building to building while this music is playing. You got your classic, you know, your brass, your strings building that tension and release, and yeah, just a real sort of filmic quality to it, where you got that kind of bridge between the gameplay and the cinematic elements of games like this. So yeah, it's making me definitely want to give it a try.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, story is great too. Combat, great game, and sold a lot too. 22.68 million copies sold there, which is quite a lot for sure. And my next pick after this one also sold quite a lot of copies too. So I'm a bit of a populist there, Joel. I guess I don't know, but all right. What's your next pick, Joel?
Okay, my next pick is from a FromSoft game, and very difficult for me to pick because I could have picked any number of tracks from those games, Demon's Souls, Dark Souls, Sekiro, Bloodborne, Elden Ring. But I have picked one from Bloodborne, which I think is really emblematic of the things that FromSoft do brilliantly in their soundtrack design. So this is by Yuka Kitamura, and it's called Ludwig the Accursed and Holy Blade. Classic FromSoft theme, and they love sort of doing this trope of playing with the contrast between a feral beast and a noble warrior. Yeah, that comes up in quite a lot of their music and their boss encounters. So it starts with the chaotic, grotesque strings and the choir. It's like, it's pure horror, eldritch horror, like very sort of H.P. Lovecraft inspired game there. But then there's a transition that kicks in about halfway through this, around sort of 2.5 minutes into the song, where there's a little cutscene, and then it lurches into this sort of heroic, tragic orchestration for phase two. So this reflects the character. So it's a character called Ludwig, who had this sort of dual nature. He was a beast, but he was once a noble hunter. So in the storyline, he was a skilled warrior who was revered for his bravery and devotion, and founded this this group of church hunters. But then the theme of the game is that the more you fight against these beasts, then you eventually turn into one of them. So he wielded this iconic sword called the Moonlight Greatsword, which is it reoccurs through a lot of the FromSoft games. They always crowbar in a Moonlight Greatsword in there somewhere. transformed into a beast. So you succumb to that, the bloodlust, turned into Ludwig the Accursed. It's a big sort of horsey creature. And just the way it's set up in the game, you're sort of playing this in this town, the Hunter's Nightmare, where you eventually sort of come across a stream of blood, very evocative. And then, of course, you follow that, where it gets thicker and thicker, deeper and deeper. And then you're just sort of following this river of blood thing. And, oh, where's this leading? And that eventually takes you to this encounter with Ludwig. So it's just like this horrendous monster. And as you go through the fight, then halfway through it, it's a dual phase boss fight. So FromSoft love doing these where sort of halfway through the fight, then you get a little cutscene and the boss fight will change somehow. So the second phase of this reveals the tragic return of Ludwig's sanity as he finally remembers that he's got the Moonlight Greatsword there, and then he stands up, and then you get these proud swelling synth chords. It's, you know, the return of him as this noble heroic figure, even though he is still a big grotesque horsey monster. He's now a big horsey monster standing on 2 feet. So there's a lot of sort of symbolism behind it, the sort of thematics of Bloodborne, the cost of, you know, unchecked ambition and devotion to the dogma of the church in this example. And it's a really good vocal performance where after you beat him, then there's just like his severed head lying on the floor. And you can go up and you can talk to the head if you're wearing the right gear. And then the horsey head asks you basically like, did I do a good job? Was I a good hunter? And then you can either lie to him and be like, yeah, you were great, everything's fine. Or you can say, no, actually, things went really tits up at the end, mate. So it has no bearing on the gameplay, but I just like the way that FromSoft let you do these things that are of no consequence whatsoever. Just if you want, you can just sort of twist the knife in at the end there. So really nice tying to the lore, the themes of the game, the motifs of transformation and madness, and those kind of blurred lines between monstrosity and heroism. And again, I just think a great example of FromSoft's mastery of musical storytelling.
Well, first of all, I want to say welcome to the 21st century with your picks there. glad you could join us. Yeah, listening to this, you know, you can't help but think this is a real left turn from Monkey Island. and for good reason, because the game is just the total opposite of Monkey Island. You know, this game isn't really about having fun and exploring and buried treasure. It's more about death and monsters and death and frustration and more death and more death and more death. So you really need to amplify the music to go along with that. And you bring in the orchestra, you bring in the gothic choir, you bring in the big epic battle music. Especially in the second half of the song, when it really picks up, because that's when the second phase of the battle is happening, and that's when the shit really goes down. So, yeah, music like this, no surprise at all. I would expect nothing less from a game like Bloodborne, Joel.
Yeah, it's a game that will have you sort of banging your head against the wall with how challenging it can be. But, again, if you're a fan of that sort of H.P. Lovecraft-inspired cosmic horror, it really goes in some crazy directions. Because I started it thinking, like, oh, it's just going to be like a sort of classic sort of Victorian gothic werewolf hunting kind of game, but then shit gets really, really weird about halfway through the game. So it's very, very memorable.
Yeah, it's a great game for masochists, I think, because, you know, like you said, it's meant to punish you and put you through your paces like Dark Souls does and like Elden Ring does. But at the same time, I mean, these games are beloved and they're considered by a lot of people as like some of the best games of all time. So yeah, the challenge is certainly there, but, you know, so is the love, Joel.
Yeah, harsh but fair, I would say. I think once you sort of respect the mechanics of the game and you kind of pick up what they're laying down in terms of the style of gameplay that it's encouraging you to partake in, then they're a lot of fun and really rewarding.
Mm-hmm. All right, my next pick here. This is one of the games I mentioned earlier that came with my PS4 when I got it for Black Friday. This is God of War, 2018's God of War. This is by Bear McCreary, who did the score for the game. And this is the main theme, God of War.
Thank you.
So this was God of War coming back after several years away. So it's got a new theme here, and you really can't go small with God of War. I mean, the scope of the game and the series really is so big. You're fighting gods, for crying out loud. So the action is big. Kratos himself is big. You have to go big. And this is the start of the Norse era of the series. So Bear McCreary not only put an orchestra in there, but he made sure to use Nordic instruments. You have an Icelandic choir. You have pounding percussion. That sounds like the drum beats of a Viking ship. It's very grand. And, you know, I mentioned with Spider-Man's theme how that's so iconic and uplifting. Kratos is also a hero. He's also now a dad in the game, but he's still got that dark side to him. He's still got the rage in him. He's still a killer. And that conflict is one of the main dramatic thrusts of the game. And I think that conflict is also reflected in the music as well, Joel.
Yeah, I have played this one as well. Affectionately referred to as Dad of Boy, You Are Not Ready Edition. So yeah, very different. Like I think there's God of War 1, 2, 3, and 4 prior to this one. So just like a huge tonal shift from God of War 4 to this God of War, where now he's got his son, what's his son's name? I've forgotten now.
Atreus,
that's it. Yeah, so he's got to sort of look after him and guide him and show him wisdom whilst also using his bare hands to rip monsters limb from limb. But yeah, like you say, just very evocative and immersive. I love all the Nordic chanting and the Scandinavian choir, all that. You've got your real strong mythic tone there. And if I remember correctly, that kind of leitmotif plays throughout the game, and it evolves as sort of Kratos matures as well and becomes a better dad. And just a really sort of iconic shift from the sort of pure hedonistic bloodlust of the earlier games to now a more sort of thoughtful, reflective, parental bloodlust.
Well said, well said. Yeah, I remember when Sony announced this game at E3 2016, I believe. Before they even revealed what the game was, they had Bear McCreary play this theme live with an orchestra, with the choir and everything. And that takes a lot of guts to start off your presentation like that with music that nobody knows. And then the demo starts, and the orchestra plays during the demo as well. And they reveal Kratos, and the bum, bum, bum hits, and the crowd just explodes in cheers. And I think Bear McCreary called it like the greatest night of his creative life. And this is a guy who did the music for The Walking Dead and Battlestar Galactica and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and a bunch of big projects. But yeah, I can imagine just playing this music live in front of a crowd like that. It's pretty cool for sure.
Yeah, and very much different to the previous games. Have you played any of the sequels? Is it Ragnarok is the next one?
I've played Ragnarok, yeah. Really great game, definitely. Long game for sure, but very satisfying.
Yeah, and I do enjoy these sort of cinematic games where it's almost like you're playing through a movie rather than the game, but it's certainly a big time investment. I remember this God of War one taking me quite a while, but again, if you're giving the thumbs up to Ragnarok, then yeah, I'll give it a go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a thick cut of steak, that's for sure. I think originally it was supposed to be a Norse trilogy, but then they decided to combine games 2 and 3 into just Ragnarok. So it's quite big, but it's definitely fulfilling, and you get your money's worth, that's for sure. Joel, what is your second to last pick?
So thanks for asking. My second to last pick, as I check the order again, is from another JRPG, but very different tonally to my last pick. So this is from a game called Chrono Trigger, which was another JRPG from I think 1995 1996. So this track is called Battle with, and I don't know how to pronounce the name, if it's Magus, I'm gonna go with Magus, Battle with Magus.
Thank you.
So this is a really famous game, and the development team included three designers that Square dubbed the Dream Team. There's Hironobu Sakaguchi, who is the creator of the Final Fantasy series. We had Yuji Horii, who is the creator of Enix's Dragon Quest series, and Akira Toriyama, who is the character designer of Dragon Quest and also the Dragon Ball manga series. So if you see the artwork from Chrono Trigger, you can definitely see the clear links with Dragon Ball. So incredible JRPG, aged like a fine wine. And this track, a big contrast to the previous JRPG track I picked. So this has got a really sort of strong Baroque gothic intro, sets a dramatic stage for sort of like a early to mid game encounter where it feels like you're sort of building up towards this clash with Majus Magus, as you think he might be the prime antagonist of the story, because that's how he's built up. So you've got this intense battle rhythm with these layered melodies, but also sort of foreshadows his ambiguous role, because you're not really sure. It feels like he's a villain, but there might be a bit more complexity to it. I don't want to spoil it. I know it's a game that's like 30 years old, but some of them still might want to play it. But yeah, certainly he's a character shrouded in mystery and originally set up as a powerful villain, a presumed major threat to the world. But then as you find out a bit more about him, there's maybe a bit more complexity to it. This guy who's driven by revenge, a master of dark magic. He's a lot of shadow-based magic and scythe weaponry, feared for his immense power. And I think that comes across as the music. And then later on, there's a bit of an anti-hero arc to him. So you can actually get him to join your party, can become a playable character later on. But just an emotionally guarded, he's cold and distant demeanor. There's a lot of sort of deep personal trauma there and sorrow, complex morality there, which again, I think sort of comes through nicely in the music. It's a very memorable theme and design with that gothic aesthetic. It's really iconic battle music to reinforce his own dramatic presence. A real fan favorite theme, and I think a really good showcase of the composer Yasunori Mitsuda, his genius, because again, it's an absolute killer soundtrack top to bottom. It's amazing. So another one of those that I could just listen to the whole thing back to back and take myself off on that adventure through time, where in Chrono Trigger you're sort of traveling through time, like going back to the Stone Age, then going into the future, then going back into medieval times. You're sort of hopping around all over the place. It's tons of fun and just a really compelling narrative.
Yeah, I figured with a name like Chrono Trigger, there was some sort of time element to the game, and I was right. There you go. Yeah, I don't have a lot to say about this one. It's a good battle theme, you know, kind of conveys those high stakes and drama for sure, and that kind of epic feel to it for sure. Has an Old West feel to it at times as well, I think, with the gust of wind and the whistle in there. That may just be me, I don't know, but... But yeah, other than that, it's a perfectly good song there, Joel.
Yeah, a great game. Again, if anyone listening who's into JRPGs has not played Chrono Trigger, it's an absolute classic of the genre and definitely worth your time. It's a big time investment, but a really rewarding one. And one, again, I think it's aged very, very well.
All right, well, my second to last pick here. This is a game from 2019 called Control. And I went with a song by this band called Poets of the Fall. But for the game, they're billed as Old Gods of Asgard. And I'll explain why in a little bit. But this song is called Take Control. In that projection of reality, something passes through the stars. So Control takes place in a building called the Oldest House, which is the headquarters for a secret agency called the Federal Bureau of Control, which investigates paranormal things and events. And you play a character named Jessie, who is looking for her brother in the building. and the building has been overrun by this evil presence called the Hiss, which is infecting people and creating these monsters and so forth. And there's a section of the game called the Ashtray Maze, where you go through the series of rooms that are changing around, and the walls and the floors are all moving, and you're flying around, you're fighting all these monsters and bad guys. And you can only get through that section if you have a cassette player. And the cassette player plays this song as you're going through it, and it's the perfect song for it. You know, it's just this badass, over-the-top metal song with a wild guitar solo, big, just melodramatic vocals, and it's full of references from the game and the story. It has backwards vocals in it to like match the strangeness happening in the game as well. And it's just such a memorable part of the game. And when it's over, Jesse says out loud, "That was awesome." Like, even the game acknowledges just how cool that level was. So, yeah, really enjoy that song and that level. And the game, too. I mean, Control, it took a little bit for me to get into it. But once I did, and once I started getting, like, your powers and upgrading the gun and so forth and really kicking ass, I really started to enjoy it a lot, Joel.
Yeah, I've never heard of this game before, so I looked it up, and I mean, I love the music. It's like a very sort of 90s prog rock code. It reminded me a lot of Dream Theater. Love the guitar solo, sort of towards the sort of third quarter of the song. So yeah, it's really interesting. A nice piece of diegetic music that I understand, as you've laid out there, happens during quite a pivotal gameplay moment. And yeah, I just really like the heavy rock style. It's very sort of energizing and very empowering to the player when you're going through sort of a combat encounter. I like the lyrics. It's kind of, I imagine, reflecting the themes of the game, like a lot of, sort of control and chaos and the contrast between those two. And yeah, I like the way it sort of blurs the lines between the music and the actual mechanics of the game. So yeah, really interesting choice there. I've not heard of this one before.
Yeah, it's done by this company called Remedy Entertainment, which is from Finland, and the band is from Finland too. So there's the connection there. And Remedy did the Alan Wake games, which is connected in-universe to Control. And they also did the first two Max Payne games. And Poets of the Fall have done songs for Remedy. And when they do so, they go by the name Old Gods of Asgard, just, you know, for the games there. So there you go. And, yeah, they're making a sequel to Control as well, which I'm looking forward to a lot there, because I just, yeah, I love the first one so much. But all right, Joel, what is your last pick of the episode?
So my last pick is something I sort of touched on at the start of the episode. This was the first video game I owned. It is Street Fighter 2 from Super Nintendo, and this is Guile's theme. As I touched on earlier, this was the game that gave me blisters on my thumbs, because I played Ryu a lot. So to do his Hadouken fireball, you had to do a quarter circle forward motion. So sliding your thumb across the Super Nintendo D-pad was quite grueling. It would certainly take its toll on your skin. So I ended up with massive blisters there. And I should have been playing as Guile, because Guile didn't have any of those quarter circle moves. It was all charge moves. So I might have lasted a bit longer with my Super Nintendo. Maybe my parents wouldn't have given it away if I played a bit more with Guile. So yeah, it's a classic. It's almost become sort of like a meme favorite. It's got that heroic, uplifting melody. We've got those bold, ascending synth lines. We've got that sense of determination and resilience to match the character of Guile, who wasn't considered the protagonist of the series. It's always been Ryu classically, but certainly in the movie adaptation with Jean-Claude Van Damme, where they positioned Guile, who was no longer American, had a thick Belgian accent for some reason, but certainly an interesting choice there. But it's got that military vibe. It's Guile's background. He's an Air Force major. You've got that steady rhythm, the snare percussion, almost sort of evoking a military march with the sort of the rhythm, the beat of it. And it's just instantly memorable. It's catchy. It's got that triumphant motif. I think it's one of the most recognisable themes in video game history. So there's the meme going around a few years ago that Guile's music goes with everything. So you can look that up and you can see how it just fits with anything. So loads of like really fun ways that they've matched Guile's theme to various bits from film and TV and things like that. So it gains that internet fame for syncing surprisingly well with a lot of unrelated videos and scenes. And I think it handles the SNES sound limitations really well. So a lot of hardware constraints, obviously, with a 16-bit machine, as a lot of my picks have been today. But I think the track maintains a really a strong melodic clarity, a lot of punch. That's a very impactful song, I think, and reflects the character. Guile, he's no nonsense. He's patriotic. He's on a quest for justice to get revenge for his friend Charlie. And you know, really strong cultural legacy as well. I think it stands alongside some of the other tracks like Ryu and Ken's themes. It's one of the most iconic fighting game music tracks, and it's been remixed in countless Street Fighter titles and fan media. So yeah, really deep legacy. That's Guile's theme.
Yeah, if I ever needed to be motivated by an early 90s video game song, this would be the one I'd pick. Because it does sound very motivational and positive, the way it soars at times. And it's very fitting for the American soldier character who's fighting to avenge his friend's death or whatever. Not that it necessarily sounds quote-unquote American, but it does have that hopeful American, you know, can-do spirit to it, I guess. So, yeah, really, really good song to end on here for your picks there, Joel. And I do know the feeling of, you know, button mashing your fingers to death over the years. Never for Street Fighter II. But there have been some games where I've just, you know, just completely cramped up my thumbs trying to win a game for sure.
Yeah, even when I sort of walk past an arcade machine, you see some of them like, I don't know if you have these around your parts, but certainly where I live, it's become a new trend for these sort of retro video game arcades to pop up where you pay like, I don't know, like £10 to enter and then all the games are free play, so you can just stay in there for an hour and play whatever you want. And there's always a Street Fighter 2 cabinet there, and I always have to have a go. But luckily, no Bliss is involved, because then you've got the joystick on the arcade, which is you know, still holding up today as one of the great gaming developments, and not having to contend with the horrendous D-pad on the Super Nintendo.
Mm-hmm. And they're making a new Street Fighter movie as well, and they've got Cody Rhodes cast as Guile, which I have to say, it's pretty good casting. I mean, you need a blonde guy who loves America, get Cody Rhodes. You know, he's right up that alley for sure. I mean, I'd say he's better casting on paper than, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme was. You know, famous American Jean-Claude Van Damme. but
some wild stories from the production of that film. Like, basically, Van Damme was just, like, coked off his tits for the entirety of the production. So, just an absolute nightmare to work with. So, some really funny sort of behind-the-scenes stuff. But, of course, Cody, not the only wrestler involved in the casting of that Street Fighter movie, as I'm sure you're aware. So, there's Roman Reigns playing
Roman,
Akuma.
Yep. And Hiroki Goto as E. Honda. So some real heavy hitters there for sure, yeah.
Yeah, really looking forward to that one. I think that might need its own episode when it comes out.
Perhaps, yeah. all right, so my last pick here. This is a sequel to another one of the games I got with my PS4. Horizon Forbidden West, sequel to Horizon Zero Dawn. And this is by the composer Joris Demann, featuring Julie Elvin on vocals. And this is Aloy's theme. So for those who haven't played them, the Horizon games take place in the post-apocalypse, where there are these advanced animal-like machines roaming around, and humans have regressed both in size and also in society into these tribes. And as Aloy, the main character, you learn why this has happened as the first game goes on, using your own technology to do so. And a lot of the music in the games mixes the digital, dark, electronic elements of the machines with the tribal, more analog, grounded elements of the humans, which is pretty cool. And Aloy, her theme, it really captures what the games are all about. You know, she goes on this sweeping adventure with high stakes. You know, everybody's life hangs in the balance. And, you know, it captures her strength. It captures her heart and hope and the longing she has to find out where she comes from and the excitement and the danger and all that stuff. And Julie Elvin's vocal melody there, it just adds another layer of beauty and emotion on top of it. The original version of this song from the first game is good, but it's more basic than this one. I think expanding on it for the second game made it even better. And they expand a lot of things in the second game, too, and make it better as well. So, yeah, I really enjoy this one a lot, Joel.
No, I've not played this one. I became aware of it when there were a lot of gamers shitting their nappies over the fact that the devs didn't make this character attractive enough for them. I remember there being a big controversy about that, but yeah, it certainly looks like a great game. And yeah, really nice track, really beautiful piece of music. I like the kind of ethereal vocals, the orchestration's really nice. It's got sort of a tribal sound, but also sort of quite futuristic in a way. I don't know if those sort of contrasting elements of it, but it works. It really resonates nicely. Yeah, obviously an evolution of the Horizon Zero Dawn, showing the growth of the character. Yeah, just a nice mix of the synthetic sounds and the organic sounds. Yeah, like you laid out, you can sort of feel that emotional resonance, like you said, the strength and the hope, and also little twinges of melancholic loneliness there as well. Just, yeah, really nice to listen to. Even not knowing much about the game, that sort of comes across very strongly from a first listen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really recommend the Horizon games. It's funny, you know, I mentioned with Red Dead 2 how I tried so much to get into it, but I couldn't do it. With the first Horizon game, I tried it out, and I wasn't really feeling it, and I gave up. But then a little later, I tried again, and I stuck it out, and it really sunk its claws into me. And, you know, now both that game and Forbidden West are two games that I wish I could go back and play for the first time, because the joy and the excitement of discovering and exploring this world is something that you can't replicate, sadly. But that's true for all games that you love. You know, that's just the way it goes. But the joy will always be there in my memory. That's for sure. But all right, those were our picks. That was the episode. And yeah, Joel, we have finished the game. Game over, you might say. And this was a lot of fun, man. You certainly know your way around video games and video game music with all these picks of yours. And I really enjoyed this one.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Let's not leave it 7 years next time. We'll have to do this again sooner.
I agree. Well, you gave some plugs earlier. Now is the time to, give them again there, Joel.
Yeah, so if you're a fan of New Japan Pro Wrestling, then do check out our podcast, Super J-Cast, with me and my co-host Damon. And as I said, I'm doing G1 daily audio. So if you are following the Grade 1 Climax and would like an audio accompaniment to that, then check us out on Patreon at Super J-Cast. And there's a couple of different tiers there. And I would love to have some of your money. Thank you.
All right. Very honest there. Yeah, very honest. But yeah, Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network for all the great shows on there, like Super J-Cast. VoicesOfWrestling.com for all the previews, reviews, articles, things like that. Blue Sky at Music of the Mat and at Just Andrew on Blue Sky. If you want to leave a comment about this episode, share your picks from your favorite games, VoicesOfWrestling.com/Discord. That's also where I post the Spotify playlist for each episode. For this episode, I don't have all the songs, and some of them are covers, because the originals are not on Spotify, but most of them are there. And of course, make sure you subscribe to the show on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice, and leave a nice rating and review. Okay, so the playout song for today, Before the episode, Joel gave me a list of 11 songs. And he was like, I can't choose between them. They're all my children. You decide for me. So I figured I had 8 songs I came up with. So I whittled Joel's list down to 8 by randomizer. But I saved one of the extra ones for the playout. And I chose a song from The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past, called Hyrule Castle. So Joel, if you want to, say a few words about this song to lead into it, be my guest.
Yeah, we've got a nice bit of symmetry here because we're bookending the show with Koji Kondo. So this is also Koji Kondo. So this is a track called Hyrule Castle where, you got this sort of very regal, very ominous, strong opening statement. I think one of the best sort of opening gambits for any Super Nintendo game is you're exploring Hyrule Castle and you can hear the rain outside sort of layering on top of the music and just like really orchestral feel on a Super Nintendo. You get that rich layering of the brass-like sounds, the string-like synths mimicking that full orchestra despite having the hardware limits of being a 16-bit machine. So an absolutely foundational Zelda theme and one of my very favorite computer game songs.
All right, so here is Hyrule Castle. Thanks again, Joel.
Thank you very much for having me.
Music of the Mad is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The songs used throughout this show are property of their respective copyright holders.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
Wrestling Omakase is back, baby. The weekly podcast that takes you across all the top promotions on the entire Japanese wrestling scene, from New Japan to Stardom, NOAH, DDT, All Japan, Marie Gold, Dragon Gate, Tokyo Joshi, Sendai Girls, and a whole lot more. I'm John Carroll, a fan of Japanese wrestling for over 20 years, and every week I'm joined by a rotating cast of guest co-hosts as we break down all the top promotions in Japan, men's and women's. Check out Wrestling Omakase right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network today.